Welcome, and I'd like to open the Senate Committee on Education and Workforce Development. Sorry for being late today. Fittingly, I was spending time at the University of Oregon booth, and they hung me up. So, first of all, I want to announce that we're carrying over Senate Bill 297 until next week. And first, we have a housekeeping issue to do, and I will open up a work session on Senate Bill 102. This is the bill that we heard and worked on last week. Didn't have the fiscal documentation. We do now. Richard, could you remind us the summary?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 102 revises the fee structure for schools requiring the approval of the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, specifically related to the Office of Degree Authorization. It changes their fee structure due to incoming demand, an increased demand in the number of schools applying for approval to their office.
Okay. And that was an interesting issue. It was educating, too. And it goes on to Ways and Means, should it be so lucky to pass here.
Chair House, I move Senate Bill 102 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Knope moves Senate Bill 102 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there discussion? Hearing none, is there objection? Seeing none, the motion passes, and Senate Bill 102 moves on to the Ways and Means Committee. I will close that work session and open up a work session on Senate Bill 270. This is the university board structure. There is another refinement of the amendment known as the Dash Fours. And what I thought I would do here, we do have the University of Oregon president with us. Before that, have the Legislative Council lawyer, Mr. Dan Gilbert, come up and give us some of the new wrinkles. I know most of them are technical, but if you give us what the work group came up with and you put into this Dash 4 that's different from the Dash 3s.
Excellent. Chair Hess, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dan Gilbert, and I'm an attorney at Legislative Council here. So I know that you've just received the Dash 4 amendment and are only now having a chance to take a look at it. And in preparation for this, as Chair Hess just said, I just wanted to point out a couple of the primary changes from the Dash 3. As you may recall, when the Dash 3 amendments were adopted, the primary unresolved issue related to bonding. The Treasurer's Office and Justice have been working with counsel from OUS as well as University Bond Counsel to draft language that has now been agreed to by all sides in that discussion, with the Treasurer's Office feeling sufficiently involved in any university bonding to fully protect the state's interests. It was also, as part of these bonding discussions, agreed to that money set aside for paying back state obligations will be held by the Treasurer even if the university decides to do its banking elsewhere. An additional area of note in the Dash 4 amendment includes there is now a mission statement for universities with governing boards in Section 2B, which reiterates the public nature and accountability of these universities. Board composition in this amendment, there are 11 to 15 total members, of which one is a voting student member, one is a non-voting faculty member, and the president is a non-voting member of the board. There have also been a series of discussions and some changes with respect to shared services. There's been a name change to the special committee, and it is now called the Special Committee on Regional and Technical Universities. Also, a work group of the seven public university presidents has been established to work out issues relating to shared services, and this work group will work with the special committee to develop recommendations and propose legislation for the 2014 session. And I'm available if you have any questions.
Well, thank you, Dan. I know it's been a lot of work on your part, and appreciate that, and I very much appreciate the attorneys from all the universities and the OUS system working as well as Representatives Johnson and Dembro. And so, any questions? Senator Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dan, I appreciate all your hard work on this. I just wanted for clarity, I think we've adopted 3 amendments. This is the 4th. Does this one encompass all of the previous 3 changes that were adopted?
I'm not sure if I mean, there are definitely refinements that have been done through that. So this is a dash 4 amendment. It incorporates with fine tuning, apart from what I've said, I believe almost all of the dash 3 amendments.
Trying to get almost. Do we have the bill in front of us now?
If there's a specific, and again, it's hard just because it has been done over a series of time for me to speak with. I could answer questions with respect to any particular provisions.
But. If I may, sir, we were before trying to figure out how to do this, whether we needed to our committee staff is whether we needed to rescind the previous amendments so that we didn't have conflicts. If we adopt this amendment, do you have any advice as regards to that?
We've got a plan for that, Richard. Do you want to?
I'm sure.
For next week, probably we'll have to do.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. The committee, I spoke with Secretary Taylor, Secretary of the Senate, and he advised us that we could move to have the bill introduced, or return to its introduced version, and then adopt whatever set of amendments we wanted to go with as a final option. We also have the option of recalling the motions that we moved, that we used to adopt the dash 1 and dash 3 amendments, and it really is up to the particulars of the committee.
Just suspend the rules and do it. It's no big deal. I mean, if the fours were everything, I mean, that I think, Lee, that's your question is, if all we had was the fours, would that encompass what we're trying to do?
Oh, yeah, that was the question.
Chair Hass, Senator Cruz, yes, it would.
Okay.
Oh, there we go.
Okay. Okay. We'll let you get back to work.
Yeah, start working on the 5s, okay?
And so, committee, what I'd like to do is adopt the 4s. And before we do that, I'd like to call up President Gottfredson from the University of Oregon, who's been watching our process warily, I think. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Chair Hass. Can I be heard?
Yeah.
Chair
yeah.
Hass and Vice Chair Knopf, thank you very much. My name is Michael Gottfredson, the President of the University of Oregon, and I am enormously pleased. It's my great pleasure to be with you here today to testify in support of Senate Bill 270. I joined the University of Oregon just over 8 months ago after spending decades as an administrator at the University of Arizona and most recently University of California. And I must say I am very heartened by the seriousness of purpose and sustained effort that you and other leaders bring to this state's efforts to improve opportunity for Oregonians and strengthen the state's educational offerings and resources available. Thank you very much, and thank you very much for your service and your dedication to this effort. I'm here today to testify on behalf of the University of Oregon in support of SB 270. This bill is designed to enable the university to operate more flexibly, to create opportunities for Oregon students, to generate greater financial resources to support education, research, and public service, and to maintain the essential public nature of the university. I believe that it will do all of that, and that it is a landmark piece of legislation designed to protect and enhance the public interest. I want to thank the chairman and all members of this committee for your very hard and careful work to bring this bill forward. I realize that the bill represents input from many relevant constituencies and seeks to enable what the university community has long sought, while very carefully protecting important considerations of other higher education colleagues, fiduciary responsibilities of the legislature, and the character and traditions of public higher education. You have done a remarkable job of combining the elements necessary to establish a true governing board for the university while respecting and responding to the important concerns that have been raised throughout this process. The bill does an admirable job of establishing those characteristics of a governing board long sought by the university community. chief among the authorities it grants are the ability to hire, fire, reappoint, and terminate the president, issue revenue bonds that rely on UO revenue streams, set tuition within the framework and mission of a public institution, and manage and control university property. These authorities are critical for governing the complex organization and mission of a 21st century public research university, and you have carefully attended to those, and I thank you for that. By providing the foundation for a properly conceived governing board, SB 270 contributes significantly to modernizing Oregon's higher education structure to better serve the needs of Oregonians. Passage of SB 270 will give the University of Oregon a board that works to assist and support the university, not merely as fiduciaries, but also through intimate familiarity with the university, engagement in developing a strategic vision of the university, and dialogue with the leadership. Provides the university with connections to the business, civic, and opinion leaders of the state. Provides intellectual support for the university, engaging its professional schools, encouraging its leading faculty, and recognizing and broadcasting their contributions to discovery and scholarship to the state and preparation for Oregonians. Provides both support and oversight for the president of the and campus leadership, and brings expertise and an important external perspective to the university. SB 270 provides the tools needed to improve access and affordability for Oregonians, be more efficient in our operations, and provide additional opportunities for innovation. It will allow us to tap into greater philanthropy to recruit and retain top faculty, make a U of O education even more attractive and accessible to Oregon's best students, and build state-of-the-art facilities and technology to better serve the need of Oregonians in the 21st century. And importantly, it assures a high level of accountability as a public board. You know, we need look no further than to the Oregon Health Sciences University, one of the nation's finest academic medical centers, to envision how such a board might operate to enhance the prospects for even greater contributions to the state welfare from the university. Governed by a board structure similar to that proposed in SB 270, OHSU is justifiably one of the state's great educational points of pride, truly one of the nation's premier academic medical centers. We believe unreservedly in having a rigorous system of public accountability. Oregonians must feel confident that in return for increased operating flexibility and institutional control, the university will provide greater benefits to the state and be transparent in how it conducts its business. The UO ensures such accountability through its achievement compacts, through compliance with standards required for accreditation, and through its internal budget model that incentivizes and rewards outcomes such as improved graduation rates and more degrees produced. I should mention that we support the appointment of a student as a voting member to the U of O board. Students now pay the largest share of education costs and have a very direct interest as investors in the university. They expect and they deserve a say in how the university is governed. We also strongly believe it is vitally important to include faculty representation on the UO board, either in a non-voting ex officio capacity, similar to the board status of the UO president, or as a voting member. Faculty membership on the board is important to provide context and advice about the nature of the university, pedagogy, research mission, and strategic direction as policy is crafted and governance is exercised by the board. We appreciate very much the collaborative approach the committee has taken in working through the challenging details of this legislation. I appreciate that very much. The particular interest by this committee and other legislators in future collaborations among OUS universities has fueled very productive discussions and progress in developing plans for shared services, very, very important plans and activities under a structure that includes institutional boards, and we're appreciative that you have taken that into consideration in this legislation and paid so much attention to it. We're all very deeply grateful to Senator Haas, members of this committee, and many other legislators in bringing this legislation to fruition. Your commitment to educating Oregonians and bringing the wealth of discovery and innovation to our state is impressive. It is in keeping with the animating spirit of public higher education that has fueled our nation's prosperity ever since federal legislation created land-grant universities and the national commitment to public research universities. As you know, Higher education is the key to individual social and economic mobility and as a consequence to the general public interests of our society. Access to education underlies the very idea of our democracy. SB 270 will advance not only Oregon's 40-40-20 goals for educational attainment, but also Oregon's economic and civic vitality and ability to compete successfully in the global marketplace. I'm very pleased to be here to support this legislation, and I thank you very much for bringing this about, for the privilege of testifying before you today in support of what I believe to be historic legislation. Thank you very much, Chair Haas and Vice Chair Knope, and I'm pleased to answer questions if you should have any.
Sure. Thank you, President Gafferson. Any questions, Senator Barr? Mm-hmm. Well, we thank you for being, and your representatives for being so flexible on this. I know nobody gets everything they want. We all know that. You got five guys up here who could vouch for that. And there were places where you wanted to zig, and we told you to zag, and you hung in there with us. And we appreciate your willingness to compromise so that everybody stays on board. So
appreciate that very much, and but do appreciate all of your time and interest, and you're looking after the public interest. I believe that sincerely, and I thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Senator Knope, the dash fours.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Knope,
if I could, I would suggest that we suspend the rules and kick the ones and threes out before we adopt the fours.
I think so, too. So you got a clean slate. Otherwise, you're going to have confusion.
You know how to make a motion, don't you, Tim?
Well, yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I mean, let's make it clean. So we are in work session, right?
We are in work session. I think it would be clean if we just adopted the fours. That's what the legal counsel said.
That's not what you're...
No.
I don't think so.
We would have three sets of amendments that we had adopted. And if the fours encompass everything we need, we should just have one set of amendments we're dealing with. Just in case there's conflict somewhere that are unknown.
Okay, let me check into that. We're not sending it on to the committee today. What I'd like to do is just adopt the fours today, and we'll make sure when we push the ship from the dock next week that it's a clean bill.
So, Ms. Chair, mm-hmm. My only concern, and I think it's what Senator Cruz is sharing, is that making sure, and maybe counsel, if he's still here, can speak to that, have we, in adopting the fours, rescinded all of the language or replaced it that was in the one and threes? Otherwise, you're going to have a mishmash. I think in protection, it would be cleaner just to rescind the ones and threes, is it?
Yeah.
And then adopt the fours. Then there wouldn't be any problem with that, if that's the intent.
And what counsel said was that the fours had everything we wanted.
Okay, we can do that.
So let's just clean
up. Rescind the ones and threes.
So, Mr. Chair, I move to suspend the rules for the purpose of rescinding the dash 1 and dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 270.
Senator Knope moves to rescind to suspend the rules for purposes of rescinding the dash 1s and 3s. Discussion? Objection? So ordered.
Now you need to make a motion to...
Rescind.
To actually rescind them.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Chair, I move to rescind the dash 1 and dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 270.
Senator Knope moves to rescind the dash 1s and dash 3s to Senate Bill 270. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none? So ordered.
So now that we have a clean bill, Mr. Chair, I move the dash 4s, move to adopt the dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 270, dated April 11, 2013.
Senator Knope moves dash 4s to Senate Bill 270, dated April 11, 2013. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. We now have the dash 4s, just because they just came out today. This will be probably the final refinement, but I would be surprised if there's not a Scrivener's error or last-minute detail that needs to come in next week. So that's why we're going to hold off on it.
And we're still going to need to get the fiscals and the revenue statements, too.
Okay. We close the work session on Senate Bill 278.
Let's clean up this one.
Are we going to carry it over? Did we already say that?
Yes, we'll carry it over till next week.
Okay.
All right. Okay. I want to open up the work session on Senate Bill 225. Richard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 225, in its drafted form, creates a task force on school reform. It contains a subsequent referral to the committee, Joint Committee on Ways and Means. The committee today is considering the Dash 1 amendments. The Dash 1 amendments replace the measure and replace the bill in its entirety, and instead would repeal Oregon Revised Statute 30.264. The committee has also received a letter from councils of Oregon State University, University of Oregon, and Portland State University that details exactly why this is a necessary measure. The short of it is that this measure was made, ORS 30.264 was made obsolete after the passage of Senate Bill 242 in 2011. We do have some other people to talk about it.
Yeah, and the background is this came up in the work group on 270. It's somewhat of collateral damage there, and but it's not really within the relating clause of Senate Bill 270. So it is being gotten stuffed into this bill. It's largely technical, and we do have Helen Holland from DAS and Penny Evans.
Senator Hess, members of the committee, my name is Penny Evans. I am with the Department of Administrative Services. I'm the risk manager there. And I want to thank you for bringing this forward. This really is a housekeeping item left over from Senate Bill 242. In the midst of preparing that separation agreement, it was an oversight. And Ellen Holland is here from the university system, and we're in agreement with the amendment and appreciate your support.
It just repeals it.
There's a huge appetite up here for repealing laws when we can. Probably don't do that enough. Senator Cruz?
My only question has nothing to do with this bill, but this was our potentially our bill to create the task force to look at our K-12 system and service and the service model that we had talked about back when we were doing the ESD bills. And does this leave us with a vehicle for that, or
we still have Senate Bill 263?
Okay. Okay. In that case, I have no problem.
So, Mr. Chair.
Senator Barr.
So, what are we doing by repealing this? What are we left with? It's the requirements are someplace else, or?
Well, there's no longer that function with the new autonomy Senate Bill 242 gave the universities.
Correct, Senator Hess, Senator Beyer. With the separation of the university systems, the universities took their liabilities with them. And that includes any liability that occurs from the students who are in the course of these other activities.
Just as a reminder, the major change of Senate Bill 242 was the change in legal status from state agency to public universities. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Still all connected, but not as closely as we used to be, and they're in charge of their own risk
liability.
Liability.
Yes, and Senator Hess, they also have a separate tort limit, which makes a significant difference.
Okay.
I'm getting some wiseacre comments. Did you want to share with the whole class?
I was just saying I thought that was a perfect bill. I worked hard at this. Yes, I did. I used to call people on this all the time.
Yeah, so you should say, Susan, if you want to share it with the whole room.
I thought that you guys had the perfect bill when I voted for it, and now I find out that I had an error. It's really hard.
There's no such thing.
Someone beat you to it?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 225.
Chair Hess, I move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 225 dated March 29, 2013.
Senator Knope moves the dash one amendment dated March 29, 2013.
Right. Perfect.
Discussion. Okay. Seeing none. Objection. Nope. Seeing none.
Good work.
Sure. Senate Bill. Yes. Go ahead.
Chair Hass, I move Senate Bill 225 to as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and with the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Senator Knope moves Senate Bill 225 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation and that the referral to Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there any discussion? There was a fiscal watch on this one because of the costs of a task force, which we're not doing anymore.
Yep.
Discussion? Objection? Seeing none, Senate Bill 225 moves to the floor of the Oregon State Senate. We are to Senator Cruz. Would you like to carry this one?
As long as I don't have to explain it, I'll be fine.
It's okay.
We've heard your carries.
Representative Johnson, and we can skip ahead and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 643. Mary Botkin is here. Richard, could you give us a summary, including the amendment that I think replaces this bill?
Sure. Senate Bill, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 643. Revises the definition of public employer. It in the amended version, the version that the committee has been asked to consider today, the dash two amendments, it adds education service districts as an enumerated entity to a list of entities defined as a public employer in the case of the transfer of an employee.
Hi.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Mary Botkin with AFSCME. And I think the dash two sort of clear up some confusion from our last hearing and lay out a little more clearly what it is we're hoping to get done here with this bill. So just in the Reader's Digest version, let me just say that as you merge, transfer, or eliminate school educational service districts, it is the desire of our union to make sure that the members who do the work, the direct care staff, the direct, you know, the teaching staff, all get to move with the program wherever that program ends up. And they would be absorbed into an existing bargaining unit if one already exists, or they would be free, of course, to form a new one if there isn't one. But the bottom line is that it protects the economic stability of the individuals. It does not protect, quote, union membership. So, you know, if you moved AFSCME members into an existing bargaining unit, they would no longer be AFSCME members. They would be somebody else's members. But the important thing is that it would protect those long-term employees who have a relationship with the students in that transfer. And so that is all we're trying to do. It's just that simple. And it puts them into the Existing Transfer Act language that has been in existence for probably two decades.
Okay. Questions? Okay. This has a referral order on it to the Senate Rules Committee.
Okay.
And we do not have the required fiscal documents and revenue documents yet.
Mr. Chair, can I ask why it's going to rules?
You can ask why.
can you answer?
I don't know the answer, but the Senate President has that order on it.
Okay.
Okay. But we'll investigate.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you.
Close public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 643. All right, we're going to stay at ease while we wait for Representative Johnson to come down the hall, and we could set a new land speed record here. This is the dual credit bill. When we last had it, before we were going to send it on to Ways and Means, there were some very legitimate questions asked about the $3 million and $5 million appropriations. And when you look at the amendment, you'll see that those are spelled out, directing the money to the State Board of Education.
Yep.
And not the Oregon Education
Department. Department of Education, not the State Board.
Yes. Now, there are some State Board of Education shall develop timelines.
Right, so, right.
And then there is a provision that I asked Representative Johnson about from legislation he's working on, having to do with the requirement of 26 credits or 24 credits. So I asked him to come over and articulate that provision, which we've included in here for consideration. And that is in section 8?
Yes,
page 6.
So, Representative Johnson, thank you for coming. And if you could kind of tell us your story as a coming, I think, from a school board member more than a legislator on this topic.
Thank you, Chair Hass, and members of the committee. For the record, Mark Johnson, State Representative from House District 52. I'm also a school board member in Hood River County. One of the peculiarities with regards to school districts can be the number of credits that districts can require for a diploma within their district. The state, as you're likely aware, requires 24. But it's possible for a district to go above and beyond that for additional accreditation. Sometimes it's for a senior project. Sometimes it's for unspecified whatever. For whatever reason, our district requires 26.5. Some board in the past thought that would be the appropriate number to demonstrate, you know, that you're competent, that you've gone above and beyond the call of duty, if you will. As you're well aware, within the state, there's a lot of discussion and a focus on dual accreditation and trying to encourage districts to begin to focus on that, to partner with their community colleges, with the post-secondary world to make that sort of dual accreditation possible. Obviously, it can help students financially to gather as much post-secondary accreditation before they come out of high school. So that in addition to a diploma, they actually come out with something that's usable and will help them in their journey as they go beyond high school. So what I've, what I'm proposing with these amendments that the senators graciously allowed us to get into this bill would be that to restate again affirmatively that within the state of Oregon, 24 is the required number for an Oregon diploma. If a district chooses to go above and beyond that, which they certainly can, it's permissive, that those credits should be some sort of dual accreditation credits. They could be continuing CTE type credits, so again, job certification, or at least at the minimum that they are core curriculum classes. And what we're trying to get is move away from just simply having elective type things. It could be up to the student to choose, but may not actually be a lot of benefit once they get out of that high school career. So I think it will help to focus the attention of school districts, again, in a permissive way. It's not going to require them to modify tremendously what they're doing, but I think it will help to focus the attention on the fact that Oregon, we're going to be serious about trying to ensure that our students come out of high school not only with a diploma but also with some degree of post-secondary accreditation or some sort of training that will serve them well as they move on either into the job market or into whatever level of post-secondary curricular work that they choose to do. So that in a nutshell is where it's at, Mr. Chair, so I'd be happy to take any questions from you or the panel as they see fit.
With getting to 26 and a half total credits in Hood River, has this sort of made it more difficult for your students to earn dual credit?
Yes, Mr. That's Chair, I would say so, here. Absolutely, because it limits the numbers of opportunities available. Certainly, they have a very full agenda to try to get to 26.5. And we know, obviously, there are districts. Well, our district, we've got a good graduation rate. We're doing very well. But there are students for whom 24 is a reach to get them to that point. So it may make it easier for some students to get the completion because the latest data we could find from the department goes back to about 2006. And at that point in time, it looked like there was somewhere between 30 and 40% of districts in the state of Oregon that went beyond 24 in their requirements for credit. So there's no more recent data that we can pull from that tells us in this day exactly what we're talking about. But there has been some push in recent years for districts have scaled back to 24. I know Portland used to be at 25. They're now at 24. I think, if anything, the trend is to go down because, as you're well aware, the demands upon graduation have gone up. The Oregon diploma now is much more robust than it was even 5 years ago with a writing sample and a reading, sample that's required as well. So it's becoming more difficult to get students to 24 and to completion. So the point would be if for those students that are going to go beyond, that they have time still within the district, let's make sure that it's really counting for something that's going to benefit them rather than just simply credits that maybe aren't. I don't want to get into the underwater basket weaving. Nobody teaches that, obviously, but just to make sure that these are academically rigorous and they're going to fully train students or help prepare students for what's to come in their lives.
Yeah, I just want to make sure. I want to make sure there's not some unintended consequences because currently, if you have a seven-period day times four, you can get 28 credits. So yes. Obviously, you get more than 24. So it was the 24 was based on a six-period day times 4 years. You get credit for half a credit per semester, and so it works out pretty well. The kids that fall behind found themselves in trouble if you're in a six-period day. So seven-period days help them. But the kids that are really go-getters end up at halfway through the senior year, they're done. I mean, and if they take a few extra classes, they could be done as the end of the junior year. And so schools have had a problem with that. But there are times that it's nice to take study halls. And those, they don't get credits for those. But so the kids are taking a real academic load. So when do they count them? I mean, it would have to be in the senior year. Because if I've taken a number of elective courses that don't necessarily meet this, and I took them my freshman and sophomore year, and now I'm starting to get going, I couldn't meet all the graduation requirements if I didn't take the 26, even though they would have to be in the core because that's what you'd have to graduate. Would that still meet what we're trying to do here? Because it looks like this is trying to do the extra.
Trying to focus, Senator Roebling, trying to focus on those that are intent. I get to my 24, I'm done halfway through.
Right.
Now with what that left of that time, rather than just take the study halls, it would be the desire to make sure that that really is substantive academic content rather than just simply running out the time clock type of opportunities.
And the follow-up?
Yes.
The 329.045 is kind of all the academic standards. So there are courses like foreign languages, mm-hmm. for example. They would be in there, right?
Exactly.
Even though the state requirement for that, it may only be 2 years. Mm-hmm.
They could go above and beyond that to the third and fourth year.
The third and fourth year could be part of the
Certainly.
You're okay with.
Mm-hmm.
And so
Absolutely.
Would technical education. I am okay. I think I'm getting pretty close to. So elective-wise, if somebody at the community college offered a course that was not one of ours, but it is a community college course, they could take that.
Certainly, if they can get credit for it.
What kind of credit? Because at community college, I can take some classes that don't go up to the 100 level. That might be fun to take, but they really aren't going to help me with my college graduation, other than getting on campus, which might be a really good thing. Would those qualify?
Senator, that's a good question. I haven't fully thought that out. I guess all post-secondary courses, there are differences. You're right.
Especially if you're in a community college district.
Correct. It's a good question. I think we should make that available for anything that my intent was anything that would be transferable, that could be usable
okay.
at the next level, i.e. dual accreditation rather than just simply another elective at the post-secondary
right,
level.
That's
my intent.
Okay. I kind of agree with that too. So.
Right.
Do we think this does that, or do we need an amendment to do that? Or do we go with this and then work on that?
We're not going to send it off for Ways and Means today, so there's,
oh,
there's
okay.
time. There's time.
Let's maybe think
Fence
about that.
Because
I think that is the right intent, is to
Absolutely.
Try to figure out to help them take a course that's going to help them
Absolutely.
Meet their requirements when they're in college, not just...
The legislative intent would be to ensure that it counts for something at the next level.
Yeah. That's the whole point.
Yeah, really. Let's not limit it to, I mean, because it does say... technical education, so it's not just college bound.
Absolutely,
that's true.
It's career bound.
That's true.
So
that might not be for a regular degree.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So that kind
but
of
it might be better the way it is, actually.
Okay. What I'm saying is,
thank you.
There are several ways that they could take that, and we need to make sure they have all those options.
It could be an automotive training shop. It could be a
right, which isn't going to transfer to another college,
right.
but
it's CTE.
But it would do a program.
Right.
Yeah.
So
you're
I
right.
Think, I think
maybe
it's
this is right
okay
the way it is.
The way it is.
Okay. Yeah.
But then what do I know?
I thank you for that. Because just one last comment. We were having trouble when we started college credits and high school credits and all that kind
yeah.
of stuff. And
yeah.
this one gets rid of that and just says high school can count them for whatever credit they want if they take them. And most schools have a relationship that they say if you take a three-hour course, it's worth X part of a credit and so on. So
I would say, Senator, I think part of the equation that still needs to be fleshed out, I know Senator Hass was getting at this with the original bill, was ensuring,
right.
making it clear about who is it that's qualified in that high school level to be able to offer that dual accreditation and so forth to make sure that the community college world recognizes that. And, we can get there. We're just,
right.
just a process. But we need to keep,
yep.
keep working on that, too.
Well, thank you for this help on this.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Yep. Thank you, Representative. Is the committee want to adopt this amendment anyway and send it off if it doesn't beg any questions next week, or do you want to wait till next week?
Whatever you want to do, Mr. Chair.
Do we have the paperwork?
What do we don't?
No.
Oh.
We'll wait until next week before we do.
I like the whole thing. I mean, I think it's
I do think
you're okay with the new information on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I am. I think that gets at exactly what we were talking about earlier in a different
right.
way, and it does it in a way that leaves it up to the schools. So.
Okay.
Well, it clarifies that it's credit at the high school.
Right.
The other credit
right.
is
right.
another venue. So.
Because we do, you can take an advanced math class. You can take all these
right.
other kinds of things that are regular curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let me close the work session on Senate Bill 222, and I want to make sure I announce that Senate Bill 643 will be carried over into next week, as well as 270, 222, and 297. So we have no other business before us. This is a new record.
I was going to say.
You are so efficient, Mr. Chair. It's beyond belief.
We are adjourned.
Thank you.